Look, thank you, Phil, and good afternoon, distinguished guests one and all. Particularly, can I acknowledge the presence today of the Lord Mayor of this great city of Sydney, Clover Moore, Peter Arkestrut, the New South Wales Productivity Commissioner, also the Honourable Patricia Forsyth, His Worship, Michael Reagan, John Brogdon, of course, Head of Landcom, and Michael Rose from the Committee of Sydney. And specifically to Lee and your team, thank you very much for putting this on. This is a huge amount of work that goes into ensuring that not only you get speakers to turn up, but also we can fill a hall. So can I thank everyone first and foremost to offer Lee and her team from CEDA some acknowledgement there. Can I also acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land upon which we meet, and pay my respects to the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation and to their elders, past and present. Before we address today's planning for tomorrow's Sydney, it's worth acknowledging what we're doing in planning for Sydney is not revolutionary. It's not new. It's all part of a continuum. A change is inevitable, so planning, of course, is necessary. But the way we're doing it now is hopefully different. It's modern and more respectful. We're listening and we are adapting. Admittedly, the planning process can be bumpy and protracted at times. Renovation and change can be unnerving. It might even shock you with its boldness. A small example, can I ask you to think back to the famous Surry Hills manufacturers of Cleveland Street, Wunderlich Industries. At the turn of the last century, Ernest Wunderlich paid for an odd shipment of tiles from Europe that no other business could pay for. Those red interlocking tiles would soon paint Sydney suburbs Sydney red, as Wunderlich's tiles superseded slate or iron roofs. One man's inventiveness or innovation changed Australian housing style. And now we have that red hue harmonising with dark green eucalypts, you know, as being very much a defining local characteristic of so many of our suburbs. So one moment of design brilliance and boldness by Wunderlich created something incredibly harmonious. And it's the same with planning. Done well, its benefits will be valued for decades and indeed generations. And that's how I see Sydney right now. Today's planning will only truly be valued in tomorrow's Sydney. Yes, the renovation is inconvenient, but as planning minister, I'm privy to what the future will be in Sydney, and I'm incredibly excited about it. Not just for ourselves, but for my children and their children. So thank you again to the Committee for Economic Development of Australia for its ongoing work and forward thinking to ensure that we always do look to our future. Of course, the future is unpredictable, so we're doing the very best with the information to hand. Some of that information is incredible. In the United States of America now, low-cost homes are being 3D printed. And advances in autonomous vehicles mean that any child that's younger than 8 today will more than likely not need a driver's license. And as I said, as a parent of 3 young boys, I'll be quite reassured if none of them get a driver's license. But being a planning leader, I know the advances, like driverless cars, present both opportunities to us all here, but also many challenges. So our planning system needs to be nimble, it needs to be progressive, and it needs to be open to insights. Today, we're focusing on how we plan today for tomorrow's Sydney. And specifically, I'd like to address how we allocate resources, why we do it, and whether or not we're doing a good job, which I hope is a rhetorical question in the affirmative. What I've realised, though, since taking this portfolio, is the incredible economic impact that planning has on our economy. Planning drives this state. And that makes sense, really. Planning is fundamentally the allocation of resources, which, as you know, is the basis of all economics. Planning's resource, of course, is land, that finite commodity that determines where economic activity takes place and where people live. So planning for Sydney and New South Wales is the basis of our growing economy. And if we don't plan strategically, the economy either doesn't know where to go or is inefficient. Without sharp strategic planning, the whole system breaks down and the state government needs to intervene. And that's not what I want as planning minister. As I'll explain, this New South Wales government wants to be the guide and support self-determination in the planning process. Ideally, we'll worry about the big macro issues, and councils and local communities can plan their neighbourhoods because that's what they know. And that's a hard lesson learned from Sydney's colourful history of allocating its land resources that go back to Governor Bligh and Governor Macquarie and the issues they faced at the time with early developers. Arguably, we've failed future generations with our love of the quarter-acre block and unwillingness to control or plan for its urban sprawl. So if you think that this government is obsessed with infrastructure, that's why. We can't live like the 1970s when people built new homes on subdivisions and then worried about who was going to build their footpath, school, or road. That planning for the old government is not a level of planning that we want to enter into now. We deserve more. Planning for the now resulted in Sydney, I've got to say, or at least bits of it, of being rather peachy for the 2000 Olympics, and we all remember that. But after that, we let the city crumble. When this government won office, Sydney needed more than a lick of paint after more than a decade of inaction. It required a vast amount of catch-up and planning for the future. It's crucial we acknowledge the absolute need for Sydney's renovation. That's why the unprecedented infrastructure spend by this government is not folly, it's vital. And it's particularly vital to meet our population growth. Projections show New South Wales will grow to some 9.9 million people by 2036. And indeed, next week, we shall pass 8 million. And let's be clear, even if forward migration targets are changed either way by the federal government, it won't impact that 2036 forecast. Greater Sydney is one of the fastest growing regions in the Western world, and we need to set ourselves up to become competitive economically in the global market. We also want to continue being one of the most desirable places on this planet in which to live. New South Wales is proudly this country's powerhouse, accounting for a third of the national economy. And last week's national accounts figures showed New South Wales economic activity expanded by some 3.5%, outpacing indeed this nation's growth. A significant part of the state's strength is, of course, our vital infrastructure spending, which not only boosts today's economic activity, but establishes our future prosperity. And as a creative economy that values human capital, being in 1617, the service sector accounting for almost 70% of this state's economy, we are well placed to take advantage of the changing global economy. We are not going to be hurt by the automation of robots, as many other Asian countries that rely on low labour costs will be. So what should we learn from Sydney's bumbling planning history now colliding with major growth needs? Firstly, can I say inaction is not an option. We must plan for the future, not the now. Infrastructure and services must meet or indeed exceed growth. Secondly, we're dealing with complex realities as well as topography, and there is no one correct answer or mightiest stakeholder. The state government can't force change from the top down. We need to collaborate while at the same time providing guidance. Interventionist government doesn't need to be there for every step of the planning process. But history shows when we think big and we get it right, the benefits last for generations. And I've seen recently that collaboration among all stakeholders bringing more meaningful results. The prime recent example is the Greater Sydney Commission's Three Metropolis Plan. It's a huge advance in this city's strategic planning, with so many people working together to provide a meaningful path to our future. And now we're in its implementation phase. And it's natural, as Lucy Turnbull, the department, and I decided early on, the GSC moves to the Premier's department, because its implementation requires a whole of government approach. It is a landmark that will guide generations, and it tells councils that if they get their planning strategies aligned, they will control the process. This week, as a government, we've given $2.5 million each to another four councils, Blacktown, Georges River, the Hills and Bayside, so they can work on aligning their LEPs with the metropolitan plans. So that's now 19 councils who've taken up the $2.5 million. You know, that's 19 councils doing the right thing for their citizens. And that's what this government wants in planning. That's what I want in planning. Coming from local government, I see the importance of empowering councils to bring strategic thinking to the local level, giving councils and business more autonomy as well as the tools they need. But I'll be clear, though, at the same time, as Planning Minister, I'm not going to hesitate stepping in if councils don't do the right thing. The Metro and Regional Plans of New South Wales will guide planning into a prosperous future. Ad hoc, politicised planning is a thing of the past. And I'm pleased the regional plan for the Hunter region of Newcastle is around the corner too, because for decades, planning for Newcastle was based around how to ship coal, not around how to create the diverse, livable community that Newcastle has become. The extension of my aim to see state governments as a macro planner is the future of the planned precincts. And can I tell you here today that I'll be very happy then in a few years, there won't be any planned precincts, because that would mean councils would have done their jobs well. But planned precincts were a necessary response to inertia and chaos. But I want the state government to ultimately get out of the way of local councils and communities. But I'm not going to be afraid to call out inefficiencies or councils that aren't serving their citizens well by capitalising on the incredible infrastructure being provided. One area we've had to prompt a hurry up is with our special infrastructure contributions. The collection of levies from developers to pay for specific infrastructure supporting their developments is a speedier, more transparent policy initiative. The six are a valuable addition to our planning process, meaning levies from a development go directly into supporting the livability of that project. And we've done feasibility testing to ensure the SIC rates for both are reasonable enough to not impact housing supply or affordability. These new SICs provide certainty for developers. There's no lengthy negotiating or foggy deals done. It's a transparent, fixed cost process. For example, the new Northwest SIC already has given almost $40 million in grants to help fund road upgrades in Sydney's northwest. But we're updating it to address significant increases in the level of expected development and forecasted growth in those areas. At the same time, we're asking for feedback from developers, councils and local communities, and we're doing that genuinely. As part of New South Wales Planning's broader mission to consult and collaborate, we're asking you, is this process as good as it can be? You know, can you help us improve that? Now let's look at housing, a great example of where a state government can make tangible improvements at a macro level. Sydney is at an inflection point with growth, and this government's first priority was housing. When we arrived in government, we inherited an undersupply of around 100,000 dwellings, driven almost entirely by Sydney. Between 2006 and 2011, fewer homes were built in Sydney than any time since the mid-1950s. But can I say that the policies we've implemented since coming to government have worked almost exactly as we planned? In the last 7 years, we've increased supply to record levels. In 2017-18, more homes were built in Sydney than ever before, and more than twice as many homes are under construction across New South Wales than at any time in our history. More new homes have been approved in Sydney in the last 2 years than in the 6 years before 2005-06 and 2010-11. And I'll put that more starkly. 2017-18 was the first year in more than a decade where enough new homes were built in Sydney to accommodate the population growth. So the reforms we've made in the planning system are working. And we're going to continue to deliver those new homes in conjunction with the private sector. The 2017 Sydney housing supply forecast shows 197,000 new dwellings are expected to be completed between 17-18 and 21-22. And we've made housing more affordable by increasing and mixing the supply of housing to meet people's different needs. Now, as planning minister, I'm allowed to say this, and coming from local government, I'm even more qualified to say this, but I'm a tad annoyed occasionally at some councils whinging along the way, but I'll cop it. We needed to move the dial dramatically, and we did. And frankly, I'm done with the term overdevelopment in this booming state. Overdevelopment does not exist. Infrastructure failure exists. Growth projections show we can't actually overdevelop while meeting the needs of Sydney. Admittedly, previous governments have allowed poor development, but I'm confident we're rectifying that with the world's best design and planning principles. And that's the issue. Today, people drive past tired old legacy projects and lament they are examples of what was acceptable. Not anymore. We need and we are encouraging bold thinking. We are encouraging the best, not the adequate. Remember the outrage, many of you here would, about redeveloping the CUB brewery site on Broadway. Now, Central Park is winning awards and is cited as a beacon of urban planning. And all of New South Wales indeed deserves such forward thinking. So I'm pleased we'll soon place on exhibition the Urban Design for Regional New South Wales Guide that will help councils ensure their communities are healthy, responsive and resilient. It puts design front and centre. And I noted there was a number of media reports concerning housing-related infrastructure delays in the news this week. This is nothing new. Those reports spoke about the Greenfield housing being delayed due to a lack of cooperation between government departments and utility departments. Can I tell you, quite frankly, I agree with that wholeheartedly. We need to move away from what I call the silos of excellence in government. And I, like many here, are frustrated continually by the slow movement of some agencies and at Greenfield sites, for example, like Austral, for example, which was, I hesitate to say, a Greenfield rezoning of a previous Labor government. So I intend to encourage better interagency cooperation and, when necessary, go even harder, urging that all of government moves with the planning system. And as such, I'll be announcing soon a high-powered task force to sort these issues out with utilities once and for all. And you can't point at the Department of Planning, I've got to say, being tardy. For example, look at what we've achieved in, and I've asked the department briefly, it was this morning, to prepare what we've done in the past 4 weeks. I didn't have enough time to go back any further. We've had the rezoning of the Liverpool CBD, the exhibition of Western Sydney Aerotropolis, the exhibition of Carter Street and finalisation of Sydney Olympic Park, the exhibition of Marsden Park North Precinct, the finalisation of Bayside West Strategy, the Everyone Can Play guidelines, and the exhibition of West Schofields Precinct. Right, that's over the past 4 weeks. The sum of those announcements means tens of thousands of new dwellings and homes, thousands of metres of employment space, hundreds of hectares of open space and parkland, and hundreds of millions of dollars of infrastructure, indeed probably billions. But I've got to say, quite frankly, I'm impatient. Last week, the Economist Intelligence Unit ranked Sydney third in its 2018 ranking of the world's most livable cities. Frankly, like anyone from New South Wales here, I was outraged to hear that. And I intend to do everything I can to ensure that Sydney doesn't settle for bronze. It's our intention with what we're doing to move us certainly to the gold medalist stage. And as I say time and time again, I'm happy for Melbourne to compete with Auckland, Adelaide and Dubbo, right? But Sydney will continue to compete with world leading cities such as Singapore, London, and New York, because we are a global capital city, again competing with Tokyo, New York, London and others, and we will aim high. Not just aiming high to be world class in our planning, but indeed aiming to the extent we will be world's best. And that's why we don't intend relying on short-term sugar hits or ad hoc decisions. We must rely on creative, collaborative and energetic planning, which is exactly what our city and regional plans are providing. But at the same time, we need to ask each stakeholder in the process, to contribute with respect and energy. So this is the vision, this is where we're going. And we live in Sydney, just look around you. We already have a head start on every other state in the nation. So I thank you all for being part of that progress. For those of you that are here from business, those of you that take the risks, employ the people and help drive the economy of this great state, those of you, from planning, planning backgrounds and councils, thank you for joining us in what is going to be an incredibly exciting journey where we will create the future for not just this generation, but for generations to come. Thank you.